Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for joining me. Hey, if you're watching on Facebook, I want to say sorry about last week. I had a technical problem, entirely my fault. And so we're going to try to get that show posted at some point, but you can also find it on the Transformation Talk Radio website. All of my shows are archived, and so you can find it that way, but we'll try to get it on Facebook and post it on my timeline pretty soon. So thanks for joining me again today. And we're talking today about this question, am I in the groove or am I stuck in a rut? So my partner and I take a walk each morning. We go for about an hour, except on Sundays because we have more time. So we take a little bit longer of a walk, maybe 90 minutes instead. And we go down the short but steep hill near our house. We walk along the waterfront of Old Town Tacoma. We walk up a, to me, steepish hill into the north end. And then instead of taking a cut to the right to head back to our house, we take kind of a long way around and add several more blocks before we head back into our neighborhood. So last Sunday, in an absolute fit of spontaneity, we reversed the route. Yeah, I know, it was big. So we went the opposite direction. And I know, it's really not much of a change. We passed the same houses and the same shops. We saw the same side streets and the same offices and the same schools even. But we did see them from a slightly different direction. And it was fun to notice that there were gardens I'd never really seen before on that path because I was coming at the houses from a different direction. At one point, we were crossing the street, a street that we're normally going up, and we crossed one direction, we were going down in the other. So we weren't huffing and puffing and just trying to get up that hill. We were casually walking down, and there was a construction site. And we stopped and looked at that for a few minutes, and it's kind of fun. And I got a slightly different sense of how the neighborhoods are connected, seeing it from that opposite direction of what leads to what, to what, to what. I think that a daily walk is a gift that keeps on giving if you're trying to establish a practice of mindfulness. And it happens kind of in two ways, right? Either it's an absolute opportunity to clear your mind, right? To be on a path that allows you to be absolutely present to the moment, to be noticing what's going on around you. When I listen to Jonathan Faust's podcast, for instance, he talks about sound meditation. I do walking meditations, but one of the things he says is, you know, first notice everything that you hear and notice how far or near that sound is. And then you're identifying it. You can't help it. Language kicks in and you start naming what's around you or what you're hearing. And then you try to let go of the language. And so the same thing can happen on a mindfulness walk, right? We're seeing everything around us. We're absolutely present to what's going on. And maybe we're even a little bit of that judging mind of beautiful flowers, not a great house, right? All of that. But then maybe we can sort of let go after a while and just be there with the moment on the walk. But it can also have another kind of mindfulness practice, right? Routes can become so familiar that we are absolutely lost, right? We are lost in our minds because we don't have to pay attention to where we're walking. It's so familiar. We're just moving and our minds are either deep in the past or flying off to the future until we trip or maybe forget to look both ways before we cross the street or until we change our routes. That's how I think that mindfulness and that daily walk has really been helpful to me, because whether I'm in a sense succeeding by being present to the moment and walking, or whether I'm, and I definitely want to use quotes around this, failing by allowing a kind of mindlessness to take over, when I notice that, because I am going to trip, I am going to change the route, something is going to bring me, is going to do what Byron Katie calls push me. It's going to push me back into the present, into noticing what's happening around me. And when that happens, I can, again, without judgment, bring my mind back to the present, gently, with kindness, and continue my practice, continue practicing. So as I've been working on the show this week, I've been really thinking about the similarities between these two words, these two ideas of grooves and ruts. And I've been aware that all the topics that we've been exploring on Nothing But Now, it's easy, and with this as with the other topics, to kind of fall from mindfulness into mindlessness, from a walk where we're fully present to the moment to a walk where our mind has taken us on a ride. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We want to talk about understanding how ruts develop in our lives and choices we might make about addressing those ruts. But of course, it's always important to start with breathing. So this is Lori Cameron's 3 deep breaths. And I want you to hold when you get to the top of that inhalation. I want you to help me reinforce letting the exhalation be longer than the inhalation. On that first breath, we just pay attention to the sensation of the air entering and exiting our bodies. On the second breath, we simply notice any place in our body where we're feeling tension and we relax. And then on that third breath, we set our intention for this moment. What do we need right now? So if you will join me, breath number one, just pay attention to your breath. Breath number two, relax. And breath number three, set your intention for this moment. Thank you for joining me in doing that. So ruts and grooves, what's the difference? Well, literally, of course, a groove and a rut are almost the same thing, right? A long, narrow cut, a long, narrow path. We see grooves when we look at vinyl record albums. If you're too young to have ever seen one, you know, try to find a used books and record store and check them out. That's what we often talk about with grooves. And when we see ruts, we see well-traveled dirt roads, right? And even as metaphors for repeated behavior, they're very similar. It's an established pattern of behavior. It's a way of being in the world, a path that we take over and over again. But then they can shift a little bit, can't they, grooves and ruts? Because cars get stuck in ruts, and so do we. But a groove, right, if you're in the groove, if we're in our groove, I mean, I always think of that phrase, you know, dancing like no one's watching. That is mindfulness, right? Being fully present to the moment without judgment. But when I'm stuck in a rut, when I'm doing and thinking and feeling the same things over and over again, I'm having the same arguments with myself and with others. I might think I'm bored, but I think really what I feel is trapped, like I'm in quicksand. As the contrast, when we talk about somebody who's in the groove, we talk sometimes about athletes or musicians, performers, teachers, orators, people who are fully present to the moment, who are doing their thing at their peak, having a peak performance, and their ego is not getting in the way. The dictator voice is silent. But it seems to me, as I said, we can slip very easily from that state of mindful awareness, a peak performance, into mindlessness, whether it's because of the strength of repetition or because the dictator voice takes hold. It's very tricky ground to stay in one place and to stay in that groove and to not let ourselves be taken over by the ruts. So how do they develop? Well, both are formed, right, from repeated actions, going over the same ground many times, right? They're cutting a pathway that guides our actions. And of course, they're literally neural pathways in our brains that are created through our habits and our behaviors. And our actions, and importantly, the accompanying feelings, lay down an impression on us. And the more they're repeated, the deeper the pathways become. Maybe like you, you've become acutely aware of this recently when we're staying home to stay safe, as routines can really be challenged. And I think particularly about morning routines. And for many of us, a morning routine takes on a nearly sacred quality, right? As particularly in difficult and chaotic times. It's that movement from bed to bath, to kitchen, to making coffee, to prepping lunches, to family small talk, even the most personal of personal needs. They're like gestures that are repeated by dancers who've learned a vibrant and complex choreography. And we get so good at performing them that we can do it without thinking. But how often lately have I forgotten that things are different, that my simple activities of daily life aren't operating the same way? I feel like I'm in a constant state of remembering that I'm forgetting, starting, stopping over, redirecting my body and my mind towards the new reality. I used to love my morning routine, so I'm facing an opportunity that I wasn't particularly looking for and asking myself, is my morning routine an opportunity to practice mindfulness, to set my intention for the day, to feel focused, to feel calm and clear, or is it becoming a barrier? In this case, is it the case that I use my attachment to a particular set of activities, be performed in a particular sequence, of course, as a way to actually to check out, right? Don't think, don't feel, don't be present, just do. So have I let my morning routine become a rut because it's a practice of in mindlessness? Or is it even worse than that, right? Is my attachment to it an opportunity to be unhappy? Because let's be honest, it's not just the current crisis that disrupts our idealized versions of how our routines ought to go, right? When is a disruption something that I use to throw my happiness away? Right? How often do I carefully plan either my morning or a whole day, whether it's work or a leisure day, and then allow something to interfere with that? And when it does, and maybe not allow in the sense of inviting it in, but it's inevitable, right? Things change, things get disrupted. And how does that then become my source of suffering such that I give up my plan entirely? And so a routine is not then a source of liberation of mindfulness, but something that the dictator voice can use to say, to punish me for failing if I fail to live up to that routine. And that child voice that we've talked about can just say, wow, life sucks, doesn't it? So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking about what are these ruts that we get ourselves into, such that even self-care, if it's just checking boxes or going through the motions or doing it to be doing it, when we're not bringing our conscious awareness to the present moment without judgment, we can let ruts establish that really make us unhappy. So you are listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune in to All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to Be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to Be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. This is Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'm Mary Angela McGuire. Today, we are talking about grooves and ruts. Are you in a groove, going along great, maybe in a full state of mindfulness, or are you stuck in a rut, right, in a kind of mindless activity that is making you unhappy, that is a cause of suffering? So I want to talk in this segment about various ways that we find ourselves in ruts in our life and tell some stories about some folks I know, friends and clients, etc. And the first one I want to talk about is a client actually who came to me to talk about work issues, which clients almost always start with work issues. But she told me in the course of a session that she and her husband were quitting smoking. And she wasn't really there to talk to me about smoking, but because I had just gone through this life coach training, I had read a book from another life coach, a woman named Jillian Riley, called How to Stop Smoking. So it was a great coincidence because it gave us something to talk about. My client, Anna, had read a different book about quitting that was similar, I think, in tone. So we had some interesting conversations. And one of the things she said to me that really caught my attention and has really stayed with me is she said, "It's like a full-time job, quitting smoking." And we had some interesting conversations about how that was possible, that it was like a full-time job. And her sense of that really resonated with the kind of advice that Riley gives about how to stop smoking. So what we noticed, what Anna and I noticed, was how much of once you get past the physical addiction that is real of nicotine, then there is the habituated behavior. And that's the part, paying attention to it, addressing it, living through it. That was the part that was a full-time job, as she noticed how Anna noticed how often she was thinking about smoking and thinking about not smoking, how often she came to see habits in her life, the way she organized her workday, for instance, in a both physical and just a time sense of how long do I work on something before I go take a smoke break and where do I go in relationship? Because, you know, these things have changed quite a bit. She couldn't smoke in her office, obviously. She had to leave the building. She couldn't just leave the building. She had to actually walk across the street. She was kind of lucky, I think, as a smoker, if that's lucky. There was a park that she could go to smoke in. But think about the level of planning that that created in her life. And think again about, you know, we talk about these ruts of the neural pathways that are being laid down by her physically and mentally to manage that smoking habit. She and her husband both were smokers and they were trying to quit at the same time. And one of the things they noticed at home was that a normal evening for them before they had dinner was to sit on the porch in nice weather and smoke a cigarette and have a couple of glasses of wine. Now, neither one of them was concerned about their alcohol consumption, but what they noticed was it was very difficult to drink and not smoke. So now this other habit that was pleasurable became a source of challenge and suffering. And so what Riley argues and what Anna really noticed was that bringing her full attention to that feeling, that urge to smoke, to, you know, retrace herself and her life through those neural pathways of how she organized her work, how she organized her time, how she and her husband had fun in the evenings and relaxed, took a lot of effort. And, you know, sometimes with smoking cessation, the advice is that when you get the urge, distract yourself. And Anna, consistent with Jillian Riley, really went in the opposite direction. What she found was that she had to really sit with the urge, right? And in a way, this is a very powerful Buddhist principle, right? Because it will pass, right? Nothing stays the same. Constant motion, things are moving all of the time, even when they look perfectly still. So she found, and Riley concurred, that by sitting with the feeling, the urge, she could allow it to pass. And what Riley adds to that is this question, or this notion of asking yourself, giving yourself permission and saying, I have a choice. I have a choice in this moment. So it's about really bringing almost radical kind of level of mindfulness to the moment to say, yes, I feel the urge to smoke. I want to smoke. I can sit with this. I can, in a sense, wait it out. I can make a choice. That's really the theme of the book. So, but Anna really noticed this pattern and how complex it was and how deeply embedded it was in her life. Similarly, another person I've been working with has been talking to me about the idea of being trapped in a rut of what she characterizes as lethargy. She has a very intense job. It has a lot of work. The hours are, you know, no one's hours are lots of people anymore. As people are more and more working from home, their hours are not really clearly defined. So she's struggling with that, feeling that she always has work to do and that all she wants to do is take a break. And so what she describes to me is feeling of lethargy, like she just can't do anything and she just sits around. So one of the things that I've noticed, a couple of things as we've been having these conversations about this, and one is that these are very much, if you think about those two voices that she's talking about, the one that's telling her, you need to work more, you're not working enough, you're lazy, right? I mean, a really harsh kind of internal voice. And the other one that says, I need a break. You know, in our first episode, and you could go back to the archives to find it, we talked about those internal voices, that dictator voice and that wild child voice. And she's really noticing that rut that their dialogue is creating in her mind, right? What's interesting about it is that neither voice is actually truthful, right? If she talks to me about how she spends her time, she does a lot of work, but it never satisfies the dictator voice. It's never enough work. And the wild child, no matter how much rest she tries to get or strategies she uses for rest, never satisfied. So what we talked about was, what would it mean to notice, first of all, and this is what we say about those voices, is how do you create some space, right? So that those are voices you are observing, you are the witness to those voices, your essential self sees them, hears them, notices them, but is not them. So that's one step that she's working on that's proving helpful, is creating the space. And then being able, in a sense, to address them, to recognize that they both, you know, have her good intentions at heart. They just don't have a particularly functional way of going about helping her get them. We also talked about using evidence, right? There's evidence that she's working. There's evidence that she's trying to rest. And then the final thing we talked about was giving herself permission, right, from her essential self to take an actual break. Because what happens when she thinks she's taking a break, of course, is that the dictator voice is yelling at her. So she tried it. And it was pretty effective. She gave herself an entire day. And this is where those days they can be tricky, right? She had an idea in her head of how she wanted it to go. But you really have to be cautious about that, right? There were going to be disruptions. She didn't want to throw her happiness away just because the day was not the perfect embodiment of a day off, right? So she did let go of that. And when she went back the next day to work, she did actually feel rested, so that she could go to her work more from that essential place and less from that dictator's voice of punishment, which is what had made the work so unpleasant in the first place. And she loves her job, right? This isn't a person who hates her job. She loves it. But when the dictator voice is the one that's driving you to work and reinforcing that, that's, talk about feeling like you're in a rut at work. That's going to be part of what's driving that feeling, is that the dictator voice is the one that's pushing you rather than coming from an essential place. And that means, in her case, it meant anyway, of taking care of herself through rest and then being able to go back to work with a sense of renewal. I have a lot, as I said, of clients who come to me to talk initially about challenges at work. And I have professional training in that area, so I'm happy to talk about it. And I have my own challenges and experiences of feeling very stuck in my work life. So we are actually going to go ahead and take a break now. And then when we come back, we're going to talk specifically about that feeling of being stuck at work and in the work that we're doing, and how the kind of ruts that that creates in our life and what we can do about it. So you are listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I look forward to talking to you after the break.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Yeah, yippee skippy to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com.
The Truth Is Funny, Shift Happens with Colette Marie Stephan is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific Time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by your mind? Powerless when it seems to spin in worry circles or bombard you with self-critical thoughts? Do you want to learn how to master your mind and feel more in control of your life? Listen to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio, Shift from Confusion to Clarity, Self-Doubt to Confidence, and from Anxiety to Peace and Balance. Dr. Friedman and his many guest experts share the insights and tools you want to live with greater ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in to Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Welcome back. You are listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'm Mary Angela McGuire. So we're talking about ruts and grooves, and particularly at this point about ruts at work or ruts around the work that we do. And of course, it would be nice to think that work was in its own little box, but I think we all know, no matter what kind of work we do, it can the feelings that we have about it can bleed into the rest of our life. And what we're going to talk about in a minute that Eckhart Tolle calls the pain body can have a huge impact on how we do our work and how we think about our experiences of work. So the other day, in the spirit of why not go through every box in the house since we're home all the time, I went through my third box of books and papers and files from what I now think of as my previous lives. I've been through a box of stuff from graduate school. I've been through a box of stuff from my early days of teaching. And the boxes, you know, very Forrest Gump of me. They're like chocolates. I never know what I'm going to get when I open them because they're not labeled. The other day, the box I went through was from my last few years working at a small college in Minnesota. This was a job I loved. The last 4 years I was there, I worked in the dean's office. I was an academic dean. And it was actually a very great job for me because I was good at it. It was challenging. It really called upon my deepest capacity for listening to another person, particularly a person I might have disagreements with in a way that was designed to understand, to communicate to them that they were being understood, and not to be in a place of simply trying to refute whatever it was that they were trying to tell me. So I loved that part of the challenge of the job. I left the job after 4 years, and really for two reasons. One, my partner took a job in Indianapolis and loved Triumph's work. And so I wanted to be with her, and that was important and a reason to leave the job that I have never regretted. The second thing was, even if she hadn't gotten that job, to be honest, I would have left the dean's job and simply gone back to the faculty. Leadership had taken over the college, leadership that is now gone. They are having a beautiful renaissance as a result. But leadership had taken over that my co-dean and I did not agree with, and we felt that we couldn't work for that leadership from a place of integrity. So we left. We both left the dean's job. He went back to the faculty, and I moved to Indianapolis. And so I'm going through the box the other day, and the last things are dated from June of to the year that we left. Cards, you know, nice cards from people. Those were great to see. Memos about the troubles, because they were troubling times there. Exchanges of emails and letters, a couple of newspaper articles, yikes, about the things that were going on. So it was, not only did I not know what was in the box, but I didn't know what emotional impact it would have to go through the box. So, as I said, the last items came from early June, and within a couple of weeks, we had moved to Indianapolis, and here's what I remember from that summer. Heat and humidity, right? I'd grown up in Columbus, Ohio, so I understood the central Midwest and the heat and humidity that we didn't experience in Minnesota. There was that. We put the television in this small room on the second floor, and outside the window, there was a redbud tree. And, you know, they're glorious, and you can kind of, they're so glorious, you can kind of forgive the junk they leave on the ground later that you have to clean up. But so I remember the tree, I remember that room, and I remember spending every morning sitting in that room, drinking coffee, watching reruns of The West Wing. It was a two-hour marathon, and thinking about everything that had happened the year before and feeling lost and just miserable, just carving a pathway in my nervous system of sort of regret, frustration, anger, loss. I always say about that time, I felt like I was being punished, but I hadn't done anything wrong, at least to my knowledge, that anyone had ever mentioned. I really hadn't. That was not the situation. But that's how it felt. And, you know, if people wanted to suggest things I might do with my time instead, I wasn't really interested. I felt it was an impossible situation. I felt absolutely stuck. Eventually, I got a job in Indianapolis, and I continued to feel stuck for quite a while. It was a great job, but I didn't love it, and I had a lot of family responsibilities at that time, and my mother used to say to me it was like I was living three other people's lives, but I wasn't really enjoying any of them, to be honest. The other day when I went through the box, I got rid of almost everything that was in it. I kind of very Marie Kondo'd it. You know, I picked it up, I looked at it. If it sparked joy or if it was a clean pad of paper, I kept it. And if not, I let it go. Because the thing I held on to from that time, and I'm so grateful to have, of course, are wonderful, wonderful relationships with the people I knew in that setting. But jobs have a way, right? Even when we've left a job, of keeping us in a kind of rut. And the reason I mentioned Eckhart Tolle's concept of the pain body is that he talks about it as the accumulation, not just our individual accumulation, but even a kind of cultural accumulation of emotional pain. And we tend to hold on sometimes to certain aspects of it. So when I left this job that I loved, of course, it was not only the pain of that experience, because, you know, physically there was no pain, right? I didn't have a broken leg. I was sad, and I couldn't let go of the sadness. And of course, that sadness was about loss, and it taps right in to the part of my pain body that's all about loss, right? So it found a perfect place, in a sense, to lodge itself. I've been had a couple of friends in the last couple of years who have left jobs and have been in very difficult situations before they left those jobs. And what I noticed in both situations was that these are very high performing people. And at some point in that, in their particular job that they were in, they felt a loss of confidence from their supervisor. And there was nothing that they could do in terms of work productivity or success that counterbalanced that. There was nothing their bosses could say to, in a sense, take back or release the whatever they'd communicated that was a kind of loss of confidence. They were just really stuck, because for both of them, they had pain bodies too that were all about fear of failure, right? Of feeling never good enough. And so when a trusted, in some cases not always respected, supervisor says on some level, in some way, I've lost confidence in you, it just absolutely comes together for them and says, oh yeah, right, I knew I was a failure and you just confirmed it. And so that too, for them, became a kind of rut that they were stuck in. It was hard for them to leave the job because it felt like a risk, but also because they were going to take that pain body with them to the next job, or maybe not even be able to get another job because they were so, in a sense, feeling pushed down and like a failure. Both of them have managed to move on, but they have to keep a close eye, really, on those feelings, on that rut. And you know, these are people, it's very important to say this, because they're people both people I admire deeply. They're really, really good at their work. They can get into that groove, and they can be and absolutely fully present to what they're doing without judgment. But there are things, a loss of someone's confidence in them, that is going to be very kind of a dangerous place for them in terms of managing their feelings and dealing with the rut that kind of shoves them into. So, you know, Tolle talks about, when he talks about the pain body as the accumulation, the energy field of an accumulation of emotional pain. And he says, you know, we have two kinds of responses. The instinctive response is a response that we have to when we're in the face of danger. And that, right, a direct response to an external threat. But that's different from emotion, which is the body's response to a thought. And that's one of the things we've really been talking about in this, wanting to be students of our own mind, is to notice not just what's happening in our mind, but the impact that what's happening in our mind is having on our body. So this is always a process of discernment. When am I experiencing conditions over which I have no control, or where there is a threat to a risk to my health and safety, versus times when I am experiencing conditions that I may not like, but they're familiar? And that gives me a feeling both of disquiet and unhappiness, and in a weird, twisted way, safety, because it's familiar. It can certainly happen in our personal relationships, and that's a place where we need to have some deeper awareness. I was working with a client recently who had gone through a breakup of a 4-year relationship. And we people often talk about this when they're in that breakup throes. You know, there is, it's sort of like the addiction to smoking or almost anything else. There is the immediate response. He was surprised. It came out of, from him, from his perspective, it came out of the blue. But then there is the lingering, right? There's the reality. This person says, we're not going to date anymore. And then there's the emotional pain I attach to that, that I may find myself getting stuck in, right? Like a car in the midst of a deep rut on a muddy road on a rainy night. And he talked about how hard it was for him to drive around the city he lived in, that every time he saw a place that he had been to with his partner, back he went into that groove. And that groove that was all those questions, why did this happen? I thought we were fine, right? All of that self-recrimination and regret. And, you know, in my early conversations with him, my goal was simply to listen, to let him let it all out. And we both started to notice after a few sessions, it started to shift, that he started to notice. And this is what I think being a good listener sometimes allows a person to do, is he was stuck. I'm telling you the same stories over and over again. I'm really holding on. And so we talked about why might we hold on in a situation like that to those feelings. And he really noticed two reasons. One was a fear that if he wasn't in crushing pain, that it said something about his relationship to the other person, that he hadn't really loved that other person. And the second one was, it was a kind of reminder, right? It was the dictator voice saying, don't let yourself get hurt again, right? Remember how painful this is, experience the pain over and over so that you never allow yourself to be vulnerable again. That those dictator and child voices can really be the source of getting stuck in a rut. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some practical applications of what to do when we're stuck in a rut and connect this to some things we talked about in last week's show. My name is Mary Angela McGuire, and you are listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Do you know how to achieve wellness in all areas of your life? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Signs of wellness are a capacity to love and ability to nurture, a sense of purpose, a good sense of humor and plenty of fun in your life, a concern for others and a respect for the environment, a conscious commitment to personal excellence, a sense of balance and integrated lifestyle, and capacity to cope with whatever life presents. Well, people enjoy their lives and want them to last as long as possible. That's why the wellness mindset usually accompanies other constructive, healthy lifestyle habits. By adopting a wellness mindset and behaviors like eating well, taking the right nutrition for the body, exercising, and saying affirmations are just a few things to structure a healthy system of values and beliefs. I will be your wellness coach to help you achieve a wellness lifestyle. Call us at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232. And visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
Welcome back. This is Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'm Mary Angela McGuire. So we have been talking about the habit of mind that is develops ruts in our mind. We know from that neural pathways are normal, right? There are going to be pathways in our mind. The question is really, how are we orienting to them? What are we doing with them? When are we noticing them? When is it a groove that we're in that is a mindfulness groove? And when is it a rut that is either mindless activity and even mindless thinking that is negative and fearful and makes us unhappy? So and the earlier shows, we've talked about some really specific strategies of things we might do to learn how to calm ourselves and quiet our minds. So I hope you've noticed and found a couple of practices in your everyday life, whether it's doing the dishes to do the dishes, whether it's making the bed to make the bed, some practice that maybe is short, that you're going to do it anyway, but ideally you're alone. You can concentrate fully on that activity. and notice, at first trying to simply pay attention to the exact thing you're doing, as mundane as it might be, to think about nothing but making the bed and allowing yourself to just be present to that, to noticing that your mind will inevitably wander, to bringing it gently back to the present moment, and afterwards, paying attention to where does your mind wander? What are the habits of mind, particularly the ones that are the cause of suffering? So I have a couple of other things that I encourage you to think about doing, things I learned from Martha Beck in the life coach training that I went to, that are ways to just kind of play with the energy field. And that's what this first one is. So her recommendation is, and this is a little bit harder to do now because we don't often leave the house, but when you do leave the house, or even just with the people who are in your house, if you're living with other people, she suggests trying this two different ways, to walk into a situation, preparing your mind ahead of time by saying, this is a miserable situation. Nobody likes me. You know, nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. I'm just going to go eat worms, whatever that little ditty is. And notice what the energy is like around you when you go into that situation. Now, I'll confess, I'm a chicken and I never did that part of the exercise because I didn't like it. To be honest, I naturally thought that sometimes and I didn't really need to practice it. But the opposite is also a great way to sort of play with the energy field and notice the energy field that you are helping to create by your presence, by your energy. And that's, of course, to do exactly the opposite. I used to walk into the building where I worked, and as I walked, there was a long flight of steps up. As I walked up that flight of stairs, I would, feeling like a fool, say to myself, everybody loves me, right? This is a great place to work. These people are so wonderful. And particularly though, they like me. They like everything about me. I love being here and they love having me here. And as I said, I did absolutely feel like a fool saying that to myself on the way in, but it was very interesting too, to notice the energy around me when I did that. So I say this suggestion because I think it's important to experiment, to practice things like this, to see what the differences are, what you can notice. And they are kind of low stakes ways to do this. It is definitely not something I'm suggesting so that when you are having a bad day, you can let the dictator voice beat you up for failing to do this, right? That is not what we're doing here. This is just try it out. Just give yourself a moment to see what that's like to do that. Another more concrete step that Beck recommends in, and I think about my client who was really struggling with lethargy and feeling trapped between needing rest and needing to work, to think about some of the things in your life that you feel you need to do. And she calls it the three B's. Can you better it, right? This is kind of, can you reward yourself? Can you change the thing it is you have to do and make it better somehow so that it's a less onerous or ugly task? Can you bag it? How often do we fail to ask ourselves, is this really something I need to do? Is this essential? So bag it sometimes. And then can you barter it? Is there a way to trade off with someone else? And I just think that's helpful to keep those three things in mind because we often use the things that we need to do, work kinds of things, chores around the house, as allow the dictator voice to punish us into doing them so that they never feel good. So if we can find a way to better it, that can be very helpful. I think we too rarely ask ourselves, does this really need to be done? So sometimes it's important to bag it. And then barter, whether it's with our family or our coworkers. You know, there are things, I don't like to clean out my car. I'm never going to do it. My partner's not great at washing the dishes. I'm very good at that. I don't mind doing that because she's going to do something I don't like to do. And it's okay. The dictator doesn't want you to do that. That's the thing, right? That's that sneaky voice that's going to always try to keep you in line. I don't have as much time for this as I'd like. So we're going to talk about this a little bit more next week. But I really want us to talk, and I apologize for leaving this to the end. I was a little chattier than I meant to be. But I want to talk then next week about how is it that racism, from particularly white racism directed at other people, there's another kind of, not real clear about that, but how is it that as white people, our racism is a kind of rut that we get stuck in, and what can we do about that rut? And then the second aspect of that is, in terms, and next week's topic is compassion for ourselves and others, I think we need to talk about how is it that as whites, our behavior that we may not even understand or perceive as negative towards a person of color is throwing them into the rut of racist of feelings about racism that they have experienced in their life. In other words, I don't think most Black people, for instance, African Americans or any people of color in the US, walk around thinking about their race all the time, right? Any more than I walk around thinking all the time about my whiteness, which is unmarked, but also about being female, for instance, or being in a same-sex relationship. That's not top of mind for me, but I can be thrown into thinking about it by someone else's behavior towards me. So how can, as whites, we become consciously aware of behaviors we may be performing, not necessarily that we think of as overt racist acts, right? But other questions we ask, behaviors that we engage in that may be pushing somebody into that kind of rut unintentionally, and how can we address that? I think that's really critically important. So we're gonna talk more about that next time because I don't wanna shortchange that conversation. So what have we talked about today? We have talked about ruts and the ways in which neural pathways develop no matter what, right? We are the repetition of our behaviors, familiar feelings, we're going to create pathways in our consciousness. So the question is, when can we bring them to conscious awareness so that we are creating pathways that we want to have? You know, the practice of mindfulness is a neural pathway that we can, through repetition, expand in our lives, just as fearful and negative thinking can be pathways that we reinforce over and over again. The question is, can we be curious about our own minds, about what's happening in our minds, so that we are not dragging ourselves down with negative and fearful thinking? So in particular, what I hope you would take away from today's conversation is really practical things you might do, ways you might play with your day, play with energy to see what differences you notice, to see what to what extent you can kind of follow that Jillian Riley question about not smoking. You know, can I, in the midst of a very negative episode or feeling or habit that I don't like, can I bring my conscious awareness to it? Can I notice the difference between my essential self and the dictator voice or the child voice? And can I say, you know, what do am I choosing in this moment? What do I want in this moment? As opposed to what are those two warring factions asking of me? So let's breathe one more time, if you would, with me. We're going to inhale and just pay attention to our breath. We're going to inhale and relax. And finally, we're going to inhale and exhale, and we're going to set our intention for the next part of our life, the next part of our day. If you would like to find out more about working with me on these very issues about mindfulness, and my work as a life coach and a communication coach, you can go to maguirelifecoach.com. That's Maguire, M-A-G-U-I-R-E, lifecoach.com. Or you can email me directly. And this is a long name to spell, but you can check it out on Facebook or Transformation Talk Radio, maryangelamaguire@gmail.com. So I hope you'll join me next week, next Thursday at noon Pacific time, 3 Eastern time. Once again, I will urge you to be curious about what's happening in your mind, and I'll urge you to be kind to yourself and the world around you. We're going to talk specifically next week about compassion. So until then, thanks for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela Maguire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, maguirelifecoach.com. That's maguirelifecoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.